Today on Blue Rock Public Radio's Earth Report, a high-ranking archbishop is in some hot water after the cooling function of his bathtub stopped working last week. He is accused of trying to fix it using funds embezzled from the church.
Blue Rock's population per capita remains steady at 1.
Last week's ventriloquist act was a flop at the Teresa S. Harding School for the Blind.
And authorities are looking into a possible food poisoning at the Blue Rock Hospice Center, as a staggering 12 residents have died in the last week after eating exclusively hospice food. All this and more coming up next.
This program is supported by Bill's Brand Fertilizer, where our number two is number one. And by Hotchman's Moving Company. Oh shit, was that the beep? This can't be our slogan. I hope they let us redo this.
And by Bernie Thompson, whose $10,000 a month contribution has left us with no choice but to provide him with 20 seconds of unfiltered airtime in every episode.
Is this it? Is this where I talk into? Okay, thank you. You know, you're such a nice young man. I'm on the air? Okay. Well, I just want to tell you all about my morning and how I couldn't find any of my black socks. And I know I...
Welcome to the first ever broadcasting of Blue Rock Public Radio on the new KLZQ. You're listening to Earth Report. I'm your host, Andrew Jessup, and with me is my co-host, Eugene Crowley. Eugene?
Sorry. I was seeing how far I could get the microphone in my mouth.
We're on the air. Be professional.
We certainly are, Andrew. Welcome to Earth Report.
Well, we've got a great program for you guys today. As always here on Earth Report, you're gonna hear the very best and the very latest local, national, and international news. Everything you need to stay informed.
That's right, and be sure to stay tuned until the very end of the episode, when I'm gonna be doing an investigative report on the ethics of cloning.
No, Eugene, we cut that piece.
What? Why?
Because you didn't do any research! You just watched Jurassic Park and drew your own conclusions.
That is research! I'm disappointed in this editorial decision.
Anyway, don't touch that dial, folks, and remember to always listen to Blue Rock Public Radio here on KZLQ or online at bluerockpublicradio.com. Our first piece this hour is on local sports.
Blue Rock College head football coach Joe Trimbelli has been under fire this week after his best defense is a good offense-based coaching strategy yielded a 127-30 loss last Saturday to Missouri Christian.
Sources say several controversial coaching decisions contributed to his dismissal, particularly the decision to start star quarterback Jordan Phillips at linebacker and running backs Marvin Mitchell and Calvin McBride at defensive end. The defense, which was composed entirely of good offensive players, allowed touchdowns on 12 consecutive plays at one point during the game.
Trimbelli's team was also penalized multiple times for having 12 men on the field. At the post-game press conference, Trimbelli discussed his thought process.
Too many men on the field? Are you kidding me? How else are we supposed to give 110%? Unlucky break, I guess.
When asked about the loss after the game, Trimbelli was confused by the question, having always believed that winning wasn't everything, it was the only thing, and honestly didn't know what happened when the other team outscored you.
Trimbelli is currently wandering around town naked after having left it all on the field.
Also out of Blue Rock College, the biology department released a new study that found that mosquitoes are perfectly capable of not making their bites itchy, but prefer to do it just to be dicks. The research found that 9 times out of 10, mosquitoes will bite their human victims and then stick around to watch them scratch and complain about it. Some of the douchiest mosquitoes were observed to even occasionally high-five one another, as they delighted in the human victim's misery. The study further noted that the mosquitoes in your neighborhood laughed out loud and were happy when Maggie broke up with you last month.
In local politics, fiscally conservative Republicans in the Blue Rock City Council, fed up with liberal tax hike proposals, are introducing a new bill called the Tax Tax, which would tax funds dedicated to promoting, collecting, and sponsoring taxes. They say the proposed 35% tax tax would both generate revenue and discourage economically restrictive taxes on the middle class. Democrats, however, are attempting to add a tax rider onto the bill. These proposals, of course, are not to be confused with the tax tax, an existing levy wherein the government takes 5% of all profits from the sale of thumbtacks. And now we'll go live to the helicopter with traffic and weatherman Brian Hitler, no relation. Brian, how's the traffic looking out there?
Well, we've got a huge backup on Pine Street. Traffic is just backed up, and it's literally bumper to bumper. I mean, we're just not moving at all, and oh, those cars are parked. It's a parking lot, guys. Well, I'm Brian Hitler, no relation. Back to you guys.
Redundancy, saying things multiple times in various ways, is making national news across the country in the United States. Sentences like the phrase, "I'm going to the store," she said, announcing an upcoming trip to the store, are becoming an increasingly worrisome, bothersome, and problematic problem.
Redundancy isn't a good thing, it's bad. It's something that if it were to go away, it would be positive. But because it's here now, in the present, it's negative.
We'll have more on this story later as we repeat it.
At this point, we'd like to welcome accomplished book critic Thomas Burton for his review of the latest offering from Martin Hanford.
Those familiar with Martin Hanford's numerous works over the years have fallen in love with his exhilarating journeys of discovery, in which the recurring protagonist finds himself immersed in intricate settings from which there seems to be no escape. In his latest edition, Where's Waldo African Safari?, Hanford challenges the reader with a fresh philosophical take on the importance of identity and self-discovery amidst our increasingly commercialized and interconnected world. Throughout the book, the reader discovers Waldo in increasingly complex environments filled with crowds of people, animals, buildings, and plants so rich, it is difficult to determine where Waldo even is. Indeed, therein lies a large appeal of the work, as the reader's journey to discover Waldo's location on each page, in turn, is as satisfying as it is tricky. The narrative is rich throughout, but page 7 was the definite highlight for me. While I won't offer any spoilers, let's just say the elephant in the bottom left corner might be worth a closer inspection. Still, the W-man we know and love steals the spotlight in African Safari. Or rather, he would, if only the darn light could find him.
That was acclaimed book critic Thomas Burton. Burton will be with us next week to review If You Give a Mouse a Cookie, and its commentary on the domino effect of communism as a justification for the Vietnam War.
Nigerian Prince Adebambo Okpara, heir to an ancient and very wealthy Yoruba royal family fortune, expressed frustration and confusion at his numerous failed attempts to secure an American's help in transferring his vast wealth out of the country. The money, which is tied up under regulations by the Nigerian National Petroleum Company, requires rerouting through an American bank account, but thus far, Okpara has been unable to find a single person willing to help. Okpara was kind enough to join us over the phone.
I just don't get it. I'm offering them 10% of a $40 million fortune simply for putting down a $10,000 deposit in a Nigerian account. It's basically free money. Don't Americans like money?
Okpara has reportedly tried multiple tactics in soliciting the help he needs, including reminding them that he's a prince and asking them unequivocally if they'd like to be rich, rich beyond the wildest dreams, but has thus far had no success.
I worry if no one acts quickly, the Nigerian government will realize that the central bank is maintaining the amount on deposit.
Attempts to impress urgency upon his would-be saviors by using exclamation points and capital letters in his mass emails have also failed.
I really hope my poor spelling does not cast doubt on my savviness as a businessman.
Although the prospect of receiving any help at this point seems bleak, Ogpara continues to remain upbeat, saying that his large stock of penis enlargement pills were sure to be a hot seller on the international online marketplace. And now we go to weather with Brian Hitler, no relation.
Well, for weather, it's currently 65 in downtown Blue Rock, 68 in the suburbs, and 42 in Ryan Ferguson's freezer. He thinks it might be broken. For Blue Rock Public Radio's weather, I'm Brian Hitler, no relation.
According to the latest numbers from the Department of Justice, nearly 92% of incarcerated criminals are men, indicating that women are being discriminated against in today's mafias, gangs, and court rulings. Although women have made great strides in recent decades, surpassing men in college attendance and narrowing the income gap to the smallest it's ever been, it seems they still have a ways to go in matching their male counterparts when it comes to lawbreaking. Here to discuss the issue, we have Sharon Capriotti, Professor of Women's Studies at the University of Virginia. Sharon, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
So, these numbers are obviously very troubling. Why have women failed in this arena, despite gains in nearly every other?
You know, I think the main culprit here is that social norms in both organized crime and criminal justice still maintain these very antiquated notions of what kind of person a criminal should be. My research has found that an overwhelming majority of Americans will describe a man when asked to describe a criminal, and that's often a self-fulfilling prophecy. When a mob boss or a politician or a football player or what have you needs someone murdered, he already has this male assassin archetype in his head, and thus women are often overlooked in favor of less deadly male peers.
That's so unfair.
It sure is. Another issue is that young girls these days just don't have that strong female criminal role model to look up to, aside from the occasional crack whore mother, tax cheat aunt. You think girls these days watch TV and want to be Casey Anthony when they grow up? Of course not. She's ugly.
So you think that educating girls about their criminal potential at a young age is important?
Oh, absolutely. Particularly with the advent of gun violence in this country, young girls need to know that they can commit violent murders just as easily as men.
But they face discrimination in the courts as well, isn't that right?
That's a whole nother issue, yes. You know, even if a woman does empower herself to the point of committing a heinous murder or armed robbery, she's much more likely to face leniency from sympathetic jurors and judges than a man is. I committed an arson last month that was caught on a security camera, and both the leading suspects are male. Like I'm too feminine to burn down a building. Ridiculous.
You know, I was at the mall last week, and I saw a woman shoplift a purse, and when the security guard confronted her, she kicked him in the balls and ran.
That's wonderful.
I don't think she got arrested, though.
Well, there's obviously still a lot of work to be done. You know, another sad truth is that even women who are arrested and sent to prison don't get the same kind of incarceration experience as men. Here we are, 59 years after the separate but equal doctrine was rebuked by Brown versus Board of Education, and we still have separate prisons for men and women with far from equal criminal reinforcement capabilities. Many women return from prison and can barely make a decent shiv, something most men learn in their first week. This sort of gender discrimination simply must end.
Well, is there any hope for the future? What advice would you give to our young female listeners?
Don't let a man tell you who you can and can't stab. Strong, independent women decide for themselves.
Very inspirational. Sharon, thanks for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, give that back. You can't take that. That belongs.
The debate about the NSA continues to rage on, with allegations now surfacing that the U.S. government has an explicit policy of spying on foreign allies. President Obama reassured Americans that no one is listening to their phone calls, so Ted Wachowski of Cleveland, Ohio, can stop bitching about government privacy invasions to his friends Lawrence and Todd. Obama went on to say that even in the event of terrorism suspicions, the government would need court approval to wiretap, so Ted needs to calm down and focus more on his relationship with Leslie, given that she's been sleeping with Lawrence. Here to discuss this hot topic, we have our very own NSA insider, Pat Helms. Pat, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So, Pat, what exactly is your job function at NSA? Are you involved much in the whole Edward Snowden affair?
I don't work for the NSA. I'm a scientist for NASA.
NASA, the National Security Agency.
No, NASA, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration.
So you just work in a different department than the part that has all the phone records, or what?
No, NASA and the NSA are completely different. I'm a rocket scientist. I help create models that simulate how the different components used in our propulsion systems respond to repeated stress and temperature fluctuations. I don't have anything to do with accessing the phone records of private citizens.
So are privacy concerns... Is the threat of terror... No, can't ask that one either. So what are rockets and stuff like?
Are you asking functionally how the rockets we build operate? Or what our scientific objective is in launching them? Or how personally and intellectually satisfying it is to come into the office each and every day knowing that my work lies at the forefront of modern technologies which will hopefully one day benefit all of humankind? What are you asking?
Yes.
Yes, what?
So, Pat, I understand you're actually from Edward Snowden's hometown of Wilmington, North Carolina. Is that correct?
No, I'm from Denver.
Well, this has been very informative, so thank you, Pat. I think it's clear here that there are no easy answers to the difficult and important questions, and as such, the debate about the NSA will surely reg on for quite some time.
Do you guys validate parking?
And now for a special interest story, we go out to Randy in the field, who has a heartwarming piece from one of Blue Rock's very own. Take it away, Randy.
Quietly tucked away in the southeast corner of Blue Rock lies one of the nation's best-kept cultural secrets. Founded by a group of settlers who left Chinatown in search of a better life, this thriving ethnic community is a living testament to our nation's rich history of multiculturalism. Comprised entirely of immigrants from Chinatown, Blue Rock's Chinatown Town is a miniature preservation of its residents' rich cultural background. As you walk down the streets of this bustling district, you can't help but be drawn in by the numerous shops selling novelty trinkets, and even the signs with intricately crafted Chinese markings, whose meanings are thought to have been lost long ago. Turn the corner and catch the alluring smell of an all-you-can-eat China Walk buffet, boasting a vast selection of foods prepared by the industrious local chefs who bring to life for us the rich and exotic flavors of the Orient. Close your eyes and you just might think you were in Chinatown itself. To learn more, I spoke with Jonathan Huang, who immigrated to Chinatown in 1973.
Well, when I was about 3 years old, my parents decided to uproot our family and leave Chinatown in search of a better life. We had little more than the clothes on our backs.
That's it?
Yeah, well, my uncle, he had taken everything else in a medium-sized U-Haul the week before.
Oh, okay. So what's life like now?
Well, 15 years later, I'm still thrilled to be part of this community that celebrates our common heritage. We make fortune cookies, eat out of folding paper takeout cartons, really doing all the other Chinese things invented in America.
This diverse and worldly place brings people together from many backgrounds. But what do the Blue Rock locals have to say about their cultural melting pot? Here is self-described foodie Benji Simmons.
This neighborhood's a perfectly fine spot if you're looking for that exotic scene. It's a nice little place that gives you a taste of the world without breaking the bank. But, you know, if you want real Chinatownese food, you gotta just go to Chinatown itself. The chicken fried rice topped with Nutella is actually a Chinatown Townese invention. Actual people in Chinatown don't incorporate delicious chocolate hazelnut spreads into their cooking.
But there's more to Chinatown Town than just its food. Chinatown Town is the country's leading exporter of bootleg DVDs. It's also famous for its herbal remedies, homeopathic medicines thought to cure ailments brought on by ineffectual herbal remedies. Whatever your reason for going, however, a visit to Chinatown Town is a must for any Blue Rock resident or visitor. Trust me, it'll make for a great pad time. This has been Randy in the field.
Well, that's it for today. But before we go, we've got a shout out here from listener Bill Davis of East Blue Rock, who says, "To my wife, Kathy, I acknowledge this is an odd way to communicate intentions to divorce, but there you go."
If you'd like to find out more about Blue Rock Public Radio, go to BlueRockPublicRadio.com. We could not be more excited to be your number one non-TV news source that doesn't make you read anything.
Thanks for listening. Stay tuned for Priest Crazy Bill's Preaching and Screeching Hour coming up next. Till next time.